Welcome to Food for Faith. This is a podcast that I decided to initiate when Pope Leo's encyclical arrived last week, Magnifica Humanitas. And I love saying it in English because magnificent humanity, it's really what the encyclical's about. And people call it the AI encyclical. Well, that's just a very small part of the whole thing, and we'll go on to chat about that. So we have here Rocio, Peter, and Jonah. Can you each take a moment to introduce yourselves?
Hello, I am Rocio Figueroa. I am Peruvian, a theologian, Peruvian theologian, and I work here in Oakland in the Catholic Theological College, teaching seminarians and theology, and also lay people. Well, I have lived and worked in the Vatican for many years. So actually, I am always following. I work for Pope John Paul II, and I work for Pope Benedict XVI. And I have a special, particular love and attachment to Pope Leo, because he lived in Peru, and I'm Peruvian, and he lived in Peru for more than 20 years, and actually he considers himself a Peruvian. And so I feel I know him a lot regarding his Latin American heart.
Wonderful, Rocio.
Oh, that's me.
I'm Jonah Lynch. I worked as a Catholic priest for 15 years, but my technical interest in AI and the subjects around it was something that I started doing in 1994 when I first ran into neural networks through a friend in high school. We were the nerds who worked on computers in the back room, and I've studied it on and off since then. And the last 5 years since leaving active ministry to get married and have a family, I am working in AI as a way to put bread on the table. So it's my daily bread. It's a deep interest from many points of view. And I think I bring to this conversation both technical ability and credentials, and also internal knowledge of the church and a love for the good that it can bring.
Great, Jonah. Thank you for, I was going to say, thank you for being up at a crazy hour to do this recording, but you're the only one of the three of us that's at a workout.
Yes. Thank God.
I'm skipping work.
Great.
I'm Peter Carroll. I'm the Anglican Bishop of Christchurch in New Zealand. I have a deep interest in theology. I've got a particular interest in Catholic and Eastern Orthodox theology. That's an interest, not an expertise. I've got a specific interest in a lot of the doings of the Catholic Church because I am married into a Catholic family and have been for 38 years, so have it's probably as far as any very committed Anglican can have a sense of the inside life and the heartbeat of the Catholic Church. That might be something I'm an expert in. I'm interested in AI in various, in one sense, lightweight ways, but actually important ways, because in our diocese we're looking at, so what is our AI policy? How are we going to use it or not use it? I'm interested in the people around me who are using it as a really effective tool in some day-to-day administrative stuff. And I'm fascinated when it's discovered that someone's published an academic or maybe a journalistic article and it's turned out to be AI generated or whatever without proper attribution. So I'm very curious, and I'm fascinated by Pope Leo and the particular journey he's taking to hold all the various and wonderful, and maybe not so wonderful, parts of the Roman Catholic Church together in one body.
So I'm presuming there, Peter, from your comment, that you're presuming that the Pope actually had a hand in the writing of this, and it's not an AI-generated document.
I am well aware that people have alleged that AI might have been used in its writing, and I'm also well aware that we'll all be aware that some people have used AI to help them have a summary of its 42 pages and all of that. I get it that the Pope, as a busy bishop, will probably not have had a lot of time to write every word,
Yep.
But I'm 100% confident that he will have approved every word in that document.
Indeed, indeed. It's very him, yes. All 42,500 words of it, I think. Can I just say, I want to mention the day on which this was launched, which I think probably is the 25th of May, and the Pope gave it, said a few words, and he said, I want to thank all of you for being here today, for your interest. So wherever you are listening to this podcast, I want to thank you all for being here today. Thank you for your interest. And Leo goes on to say in these words of introduction, what a great sign of hope that with all of our differences, we can listen to one another. This interchange clearly bespeaks of the gravity of the moment, as well as confidence that together we can discern the major questions of our time and so the future of humanity. Amen. So what can we say about this document? Who wants to launch off here with the starter? Jonah, you're looking most ready there. I think you look ready to go.
All right. All right. Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is not technical, but it's something about the spirit of the document, which I was impressed by. He doesn't deduce almost anything. I can't actually remember anything that was deductive. I can't remember anything that felt like the weight of tradition was being leveraged in order to force the result into one specific corner. I feel like his speech about disarming our words is actively present in the way the document is written, that it is not a violent document. It's not a document that takes a stand in an oppositional sense, except to very to sing a clarion call. It's more like a hymn of the greatness of humans, and to not forget our greatness, to not settle for something less. So I felt like that was very beautiful and correct. You know, I think that the church is taking a stance that is less the line that we know the truth and everyone else must listen to us, and more we are reminding you of who you are, and we must work together in order to decide how to live in this new world and what to build.
It's a great opening comment, Jonah. You remind me of a proverb which is well known to the people of this land, Aotearoa. What is the most important thing in the world? He tangata, he tangata, he tangata. It is the people, it's the people, it's the people. This is a very people document.
Mm-hmm. And responds a lot, I would say, to his Augustinian origin. He is an Augustinian. And San Augustine really, all his theology was began with an anthropological question, who I am. Mm-hmm. And I think Pope Benedict, what we can see is that interest that he's about questioning. He's not against technology. He's not, as you said, aggressive or violent, but he's questioning, okay. And the most important thing which touched me is the anthropological question. So actually the title, no? Magnificat Humanis, are we going to flourish as human beings with AI? Are we going to be happier? Are we going to improve the life for all the people of the planet? Are we going to help, or AI will help the most poor? So there are anthropological important questions, more than necessary answers.
Indeed.
It is a wonderfully humble document. It's gentle in its approach to the questions, as you're saying, Dana and Roger. It's also fascinating for me, as an Anglican, we do theology differently, and I love the way in the document the whole framing is around the social doctrine of the church and the drawing out of solidarity and subsidiarity and social justice and so forth, and yeah, out of that then making comment, constructive or critical, of AI. And it's wonderfully attentive to the poor, to the people who are going to be left behind in this potential journey we're on as humanity with AI. And it's pretty strong and strident but not shouty in its criticism of those who control AI and where it's going. He doesn't name names, but he's got some of the that the moguls of this world, who are making lots and lots of money out of AI in his sights, and saying, you know, you're not ethically neutral in what you're doing here, and you have the capacity to shape the world for better or for ill through how you lead in this way. So it's pathetic, it's thorough, and it's very compassionate.
So Rocio and Jonah, you were both nodding when Peter was speaking, but Jonah, I think you were nodding more. So you get to respond first. Nodding especially, did I get this right, that when Peter was raising possible concerns, that aligning with the Pope and being aware of the concerns of AI?
Well, I was thinking more of the political leaders that he takes aim at without naming them, but when he talks about the hegemon who is losing his hegemony and the other powers who would like to take its place, we're talking about geopolitics, I think, first of all, but the second level down, the international, multinational corporations that also are, he says something about the companies that have a larger GDP than many countries. That's true, and these companies do command a large part of what happens in the world. I think it's great when a man can stand up to the powerful and say words that are equanimous and simply true. He's not shouting. He is saying very clearly, this is good and that is not, and you are acting and thinking in a way that is entirely determined by the concept of power. And in doing so, you are being less than human. And by saying that straightly, you know, he drew the ire of Trump famously, but, there are lots of people who would feel like that was aimed at them, and rightly so. But I really love the fact that, you know, as we've all been saying so far, he's not being a divisive populist. He's not taking the side of the poor in a way that that belittles the importance and also the beauty of the technical advances that we're making. But he's saying that every human is valuable. And so we must not think of this moment as one in which you can dispense with large parts of the population because they won't be able to retool fast enough. So let's just wait for them to disappear.
And I think that in that sense, he's initiating the dialogue. I think it's important the fact that we have the first big leader of the world initiating the opening the dialogue for a topic that needs to be discussed. Mm-hmm. And I think he is trying to also give us like an ethical framework and also political, I would say, because as you say, he talks to power. He says the mm-hmm. truth to power. So I think that's a big thing, because the dialogue has to begin between the techno guys, between governments, between philosophers, theologians, specialists in technology. So I think he's encouraging us all, and that's why also we are doing this. But I think it's also the fact that the problem that his concern is if really this will help humanity. And I am really concerned as he is regarding, actually, I was listening to, I was telling you guys that I was listening to the co-founder on Anthropic. Clark, if I'm not wrong, Jack Clark, and he was saying that is absolutely sure that in few years there will be massive loss of jobs, unemployment, and the ones who will suffer are not the specialists. The ones who will suffer are the median people that have no big important studies, etc. So it's a question also of what will happen to those people.
Let me push back a little bit, because the first people who are losing their jobs are the specialists. The thing that has been automated is programming, first of all.
Yep.
Most other jobs are not currently able to be automated. Most of the lower level menial jobs are not even close to being automated. So that's one question. But then the other one is, what would you say at the time of the invention of the sewing machine? Would you say that the hundreds of thousands of seamstresses around the world should have continued sewing by hand instead of using sewing machines, which caused, probably a tenfold increase in productivity and therefore a reduction in jobs?
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm not against, but we have to think about it. You know, it's like we have to begin thinking, and I think that the governments are not in one way, one phrase that he says is all gas and no brakes. So it's advancing so fast, but we need to begin in one way anticipating or trying to think about it and look for solutions also. For example, how do we do, and not only about what you were saying about the jobs, but what do we do with 2 billion of people who have no internet? And if they don't have internet, they are about absolutely invisible from AI. So all the information will, it is digital. So all the people in the world who work with analogical, they are invisible for the entire world. What are we going to do with them?
One of the things the encyclical woke me up to was the fact that without being conscious of it, I was thinking technology's just rolling along and somehow we have to keep up and change it or adapt it where we can. But it seems to me that what the Pope's saying is we can be more engaged and we must be more engaged and be more discerning in our use of technology. We can't be just along for the ride because that's when the problems really start, or not that they haven't already begun. Peter.
The unemployment potential for AI is interesting, and I hear what you're saying, Jonah, and I'll show that Jonah, you push back. Like in my own workplace, I could see that AI could mean that we don't need to keep adding support people to certain roles because AI might take care of that. And it could be that when someone retires, we don't need to replace them because AI can help with some of the admin stuff. That's been the way of technology. And as you rightly said, when sewing machines came along and then other things happened, or when typewriters replaced quills and then computers replaced typewriters, we've survived all of that as humanity. But there is something about AI which just, I think, makes some of us uneasy about the pace of change and whether we can keep up. And they're just areas of work life that I don't know much about. But I mean, take making films, for example, which maybe they employ people here in New Zealand, California, obviously, and all that sort of thing. And there's so much you can do with AI that can be just, one person and a computer. So we may not yet be able to guess the full scope. And one of my questions about the encyclical is, actually, is the Pope sufficiently concerned about the full impact of AI on the world? And one of the images I've got in my mind, but Jonah, you're the expert, so you shoot me down if you want. But when we invented typewriters, typewriters couldn't make another typewriter. But AI and robots could actually reproduce themselves. And there is potential for AI to not just help people to lose their jobs, but actually to take over whole parts of society. Now, that may sound fantastical, but AI is an incredible development in parallel to human intelligence, and of course, in certain ways, exceeds what our brains can do. I just wonder if we've got a sufficient vision for where this could end up.
China.
Lots of things to unpack. One is that I'd just like to declare that I'm enormously optimistic and
That's
delighted
good.
by the possibility of speaking with a librarian who has read all the books in the library and can point me to the right one for whatever I'm looking for at any given time. I think it's a wonderful thing to be able to manage information at a scale that no human ever could before, but now can. I think that is a truly beautiful advancement. And one of the things that I do is build knowledge management systems to harness that power in different directions for different purposes. But essentially to make intellectual prosthetics that you know, like a car could allow us to move around space, you know, more quickly. We can move around the intellectual space more quickly and traverse far greater distances now than we ever could before. And I think that's a net good. And you know, being afraid of efficiency, as to some extent the encyclical is, and I think wrongly, I think efficiency is great. You know, that's efficiency in itself doesn't mean stopping our attention to the good, the beautiful, the true. So that's a first point that I would say. As far as you know, the self-replicating ability of AI and potentially robotics, we're not there yet, but this is part of the dream of robotics. You know, the robot that builds itself. That may be possible. But, you know, and maybe it's hopefully possible. But the thing that I always want to remember in that context is that replicating a thing that already exists is remaining within the existing distribution, remaining within the map of the roads that have already been traveled. But the very special and beautiful thing that humans do is we go outside of the map. We go into the empty spaces. We go where no one has gone before. We discover new things. We invent new languages. We made up language in the first place. It didn't come down from you know, somewhere else. We invented it. And by inventing language, we made the raw material for the codification of all of our knowledge. Well, not all of our knowledge, but you know, some part of our knowledge. And I think that what Rocio was saying about those who are not represented in the digital sphere is actually a great good. It's a great good that there are large swaths of humanity that are still as yet unrepresented in the AI, because that's information that we need and that will enrich the AI. So it will be a convergence of incentives for the AI people to codify and use the information coming from other populations, because it will make it better, make our models of the world better. So, you know, those are a couple of things. You know, we could go in a lot of different directions. I'll let you guide us, John. Which way would you like to go from here?
Well, okay, I'm just aware that we could talk about the AI aspects of the encyclical for a long time, because there are so many implications, ramifications. But I wouldn't want people who are listening to this podcast to not be aware of many of the other issues that Pope raises when he's talking about magnificent humanity. So of the other issues that are there, maybe we could each drop one other issue in with a comment. Peter, do you like to?
We've got pretty focused on what it's saying about AI, so I've not got a great comment, but he did have something very interesting to say, a number of things interesting to say about war, but one thing in particular, he uses a phrase, I'm paraphrasing here, but just war theory has had its day.
Yeah.
I've seen some comment on the internet on, because it's like, is the Pope really saying that? Isn't just war theory still really important to work out when you go to war? But I think he is saying we're in this kind of complicated world where going to war is not a simple thing, and just war theory just may not be up to helping us to make decisions. And on what basis do we engage in defending ourselves? Christians, I hope, are always on the Pope and any theologian side about not waging war, not, you know, aggressively starting war. But it's a very interesting comment, and it's part of the grandeur of humanity, because he also makes the point, what does war do? It just destroys people. It destroys livelihood. It's destructive.
And of course, he quotes Francis, who quotes Paul VI, you know, never again, no war, no war. Yes, the just war, when can we go to war? But again, the problem is our default setting has become, he says that peace is the little interval that might be between the normal existence, which is war. And that's a fundamentally flawed understanding of the potential of what humans can do when we seek reconciliation and dialogue together. So the just war has been raised. Rocio?
Another topic that I like a lot when he says, when there is this discussion if AI in one moment can have awareness or consciousness, and he's very clear to differentiate that really AI is not a human. So I think that we have to be careful in the sense that AI cannot, you talk about efficiency, but I think that we can be so enthusiastic. I am not against, I use a lot of AI and I dialogue with AI, like it's like my assistant more or less. I work a lot with AI. But what I am a little bit concerned, and that's why for me, dialogue and education is so important, is because AI cannot replace a human creativity. It cannot replace intuition, cannot replace, it's not wise. Has not pain, does not experience. So all the knowledge. One thing is that, yes, I think AI is the erudite of the erudites. He has all the information, it's incredible. But I have to say, as a lecturer, sometimes I get bored with AI because AI is so predictable in his responses. It's so predictable. It's so logic that it's boring. In the sense that I don't find the creativity that kindle when and actually immediately, I am also a lecturer, and I can immediately say when a student has used AI to prepare their presentations, they have been doing presentations. And I have to say that what worries me, and that's something that the Pope also talks about, education. When the students think that they can replace their own formation or knowledge with AI, it becomes a problem. If I use it not as a tool, but if I use it to replace my own knowledge, the students don't do the process of human knowledge, which is quite important. So I think that you can be so enthusiastic with AI that you lack the wisdom of reality. I am also, I think, that is a little bit, AI is very colonialist in the sense that it's one way of knowledge, which is the Western kind of knowing. I am also a specialist in the indigenous research, for example, and there is nothing about the methods of other types of research. It's very Western way, very logical, not indigenous at all. And for me, it cannot do it, because other types of knowing is through relations, connections, community, and AI will never have that information. So that's why I don't think efficiency is the best and most important value. When I am worried if we consider that efficiency will be the most important value in as humans.
Indeed. I can't help but notice that we haven't yet mentioned the one thing that most people talking about the encyclical mention, which is, are we building another Tower of Babel, or are we involved in the creation, upbuilding, reconstruction of Jerusalem? And I'm thinking people often take away images, and that could be an image that we could hang things on. So what does it mean to be, you know, what are the signs in our own existence that we might be building another Tower of Babel? What is the evidence that, or where are the places that we are reconstructing Jerusalem?
I have a little bit of trouble with this dichotomy, because they're not really comparable. In the one case, building a new city, the tower that has never been built before, and in the other case, returning to the past to rebuild something that already was and that lives in your memory as something beloved. You've been in exile for, you know, 70 years, and you come back and build the walls with the trowel in one hand and the sword in the other, as T.S. Eliot wrote about that moment. And you know, there's something beautiful about that. I don't deny it at all. But I also think there's something beautiful in the wrestling with God to make a world that we think is good. And I think that God gives us that freedom, and that the skyscrapers are not a symbol of hubris, essentially. They are a symbol of grandeur, as well as a symbol of, you know, many other things. But I don't want to read the Tower of Babel as a purely negative moment. There's another, you know, the desire for unity, the desire for the unity of the human race. I understand that in this context, it's being used as negative, and you know, the reconstruction of Jerusalem is positive. But I don't feel like the image gets us all the way there to a decision.
Jonah, I think Leo would be delighted that you haven't simply taken on board his image, but have come up with the wrestling with God is a wonderful image. This is what the dialogue's about, I think, not simply accepting, this is what we now do, it's written in the encyclical. But like we're intelligent creatures to engage ourselves and this to come up with our own images from our own experience. And I like that, the wrestling with God. Peter, how would have you responded to that, my question about the two images, if you hadn't heard Jonah?
Well, I wasn't particularly grabbed by them. I could see what he was doing. It was a fairly clever way of taking some biblical material and trying to fit it to the situation. But I think that the power and strength of the document is much more in the development and the articulation of the social doctrine of the church, and then doing that mapping of the solidarity, the subsidiarity, the social justice, and so forth, to the impact of AI on the world, the challenges we face, because it's not always helping solidarity and subsidiarity, and certainly can be part of social injustice and not justice. So I thought the strength in that sense in the document is theological rather than biblical. I'm sure it'll be appreciated for generations to come as a wonderful development of the magisterial tradition associated now around social doctrine teaching in Catholic theological world.
Which, of course, the Pope refers to the social Catholic social teaching, the teaching of the Church. He himself goes back to Rerum Novarum, the first Leo, he calls them, at the early years of last century. I've just forgot, was it 1898, 03? 98, I think, was it?
1998.
But then talks, there's a section of the encyclical that talks about the development of Catholic social doctrine. And someone I don't know commented to me that, thanks be to God, this encyclical can, if we let it, mark the end of the church being focused on sex
and
moving to much bigger, which of course Leo himself has suggested at other times. So let's unpack, what is the social doctrine of the church? I don't like the word doctrine that much. It seems a bit like found in a book on a shelf rather than active and dialogical, as the Pope implies. But when we talk about Catholic social doctrine, what are we talking about?
Well, we begin with a question that we said, not the dignity of the human person, which is at the center, I would say, of the cyclical. So are we building these new technologies, putting into the center the dignity of the person? That's one important element. The second one is all of us, the equality and the equal dignity of every human being. And in that regard, Pope Leo talks about the imbalance of power and inequality that AI can bring. And actually he says that sometimes we say is neutral, as a computer is neutral, how do you use it? But he says something important. He says now it's not moral neutral anymore. And actually it's true, it's not moral neutral AI. Because of course, who is running now these tech big corporations, what are their interests? Their interest is just have lots of money and you know, and not care about the ones who creating more a bigger gap. And another thing is 50% of the potential is in the hands of United States and China. So again, it's quite also, if it's creating more imbalance of power than before, will it create more imbalance of power than before? So the big teaching of the church is about everything has to be for the common good. Every good has to be for the common good. And that's my concern. The ones who are pushing all this new technology, are they really doing, because they are in a competition between these corporations, a big competition, the Silicon Valley, competing one with the other, and not necessarily taking care of the consequences. And I'm, you know, so and the point that also the Pope is saying, are we putting the moral decision just in them? And that is why I think his idea was brilliant. We need organizations, international organizations, to regulate. Actually, this guy on Anthropic was saying we need people who regulate us from outside the corporations, and that's what Pope Leo is proposing. So social teaching means accountability, and these big corporations needs accountability, transparency of what they are doing, of their new discoveries. That's another point.
Peter, social teaching.
It's from my outside view looking in, so to speak, it's about society. How does society serve and help the individual and the family? And how does the individual and the family contribute to society, all associated with the importance of the dignity of each person and the flourishing, the grandeur, the magnificence of humanity? And about 130 years of this teaching in the modern age has developed, I think, an amazing ability, and it comes through the whole document, to veer towards but not be socialist, and to veer towards but not be capitalist. But it's not exactly threading some sort of narrowly centrist ground through that. It's a calling of us to not only, if you like, find our own flourishing, but to help the other, our neighbour, even the alien, and so forth, to find that flourishing. And so it's a very powerful tool, in one sense, to work on analysing and evaluating any given aspect of human life. And in this case, of course, AI, but along the way, as we've noted, war and other things are mentioned as well.
Jonah, I'm going to hone the question a little more to give it to you. And that is that, imagine you're teaching a group of college students, or maybe 18, 19, 20-year-olds. What would you emphasize to them that in a first class on social teaching that it's about?
Well, I've taught a lot of classes, but never one on social teaching.
This is your first. We're now at Jonah's first social teaching course.
Let me start from where Peter left it, that... the document leaves a lot of space. It's a very spacious feeling that you have reading what the Pope is saying, because he points out a lot of possible limitations, a lot of possible problems. But the essential recentering that he does is to place the grandeur of humanity in a very wide field, and call us away from the single responses. So there's the single response, which is efficiency is the only God, or there's a single response, which is that profit is the only way that we can make decisions ultimately. And now, I don't want to be negative about these things, because I do think that profit and, you know, price discovery is a very important way to understand information and to make good decisions. And that you know, probably the Soviet Empire fell because it didn't have good price discovery. It didn't have good information about, you know, those are theories that people talk about. But and in the case of doing good as a requirement, you know, as a socialist kind of view of the world, I think that also fails, because it doesn't it's not broad enough. And so what the Pope is calling us to is a very broad view, where the center is the human person, and the most important reality is the good of the person, and we all must wrestle with that in every generation. So it's not an essentially negative or partisan point of view, but it's a point of view that says, don't look for an easy answer. There is no easy answer. And also, even the talk about centralization. I mean, it's kind of obvious that there's a time in every technical development where power is heavily concentrated in the few. And it's also kind of obvious that then society develops, you know, trade organizations, or it develops regulation, and politics moves more slowly than business. But that's in the nature of things. I fully expect that Right now, so the fact that the current AI companies are acting in a selfish way, I don't think is exactly right. I mean, one of them maybe. I think OpenAI is governed by very bad incentives in general. But Anthropic said no to the Pentagon. They said, no, we're not going to give you permission to use our software. And they fought the US government about it. Elon Musk is building an AI which is truth-seeking, maximally truth-seeking. And I think he's doing a pretty good job of that. You know, that's his explicit goal. And how he does it technically is interesting. It's important. DeepSeek is building open source AI that's as good as everyone else's. So this is China saying, oh yeah, you're going to corner the market. Well, we're going to make it open source for free. So I think that in the competition of these major companies right now, there is a very hopeful kind of ecosystem because no one of them is able to corner the market. AI is not a monolith. It's information that has been rendered accessible at a speed and a dimension that it never was before, but it is essentially akin to something like a library, not an agent, you know, and so that to me says, yes, there's an intermediate time in which everything is very centralized, but then the other forces in society tend to resolve that and distribute it.
You are very optimist.
More optimistic than you, Rocio?
Yes.
No, but we've been alive for so many centuries. I mean,
we will continue alive, but many are not living a life of dignity. We will survive. We have survived so many things. We will survive.
So one of the things we're not touching on here, in one of the areas I would say in a second edition, I would like to see a lot more attention to it. I think there's a fundamental ethical issue which AI and proponents of it and even critics of it are simply not addressing. It is a mammoth power consumer. It consumes a lot of water as well. We've been talking in New Zealand about some data center being established in Southland, which is fairly near to some major power generation. It would be the second largest power user in New Zealand after, I think, our aluminium smelter. We've had no national debate about this. Why would we even have AI if it's going to push the price of power up, which I believe it has been doing in the States, and it must do in New Zealand if it's going to incorporate the second largest power user? Aren't we depriving people of flourishing because their power bills are going up, because we have not examined the question of whether AI is worth having at that price point? And that's touched on in the encyclical, but Leo just says something about we should find some more sustainable power options here. I don't think that's a deep enough searching of that fundamental ethical question about AI.
And he says that we need an ecology of communication. And I think that is quite interesting to think about that we need sustainable technological solutions to reduce environmental impact. And actually also that we do not think about that, you know, we think, okay, of all the ecological impact using my car, and I try always to go in bicycle, you know, but I have to be also conscious and responsible in my using of AI, because I am using a lot of energy and water in the planet. So it requires a lot of conversation, looking for solutions, consciousness, responsibility of how we use it also.
I realize that we're fast moving towards our a lot of time. I would like to hear each of you comment on how this changes the perception of church, because I think there is a lot of potential here, because it's seeing things in a different, more open to the world way, which of course we hopefully started to do 60, 70 years ago plus, but I'm not sure. I wonder if the church is becoming more of a ghetto mentality, and by the church, I mean the Christian community. Is the church becoming more of a ghetto mentality? Who's in, who's out, who's right, who's wrong, who's good, who's bad? Who's writing the good stuff, who's saying the good stuff, and who's not? Whereas this document is continuing the impetus of the council to not be a church that's walled, to use Jerusalem image, not a walled church, but our place of being is in the world. Like our community is not a church community. Our community is the world. So I'm just wanting to apply this to how we see ourselves as Christian communities. Jonah, do you want to jump in on that one first?
Well, I guess I've always been a universalist. I've always cared more about humanity than I've cared about the Catholic Church or the Christian community. In my path, I have found a great many good things in the Catholic Church and the Christian community, but that aren't exclusive to it. And I don't know if or how much those good things are accessible completely outside of that communion. I guess I've renounced trying to resolve that issue. How exceptional is being Catholic? How important is it? And where I land is that there's a very beautiful man who taught us what it is to be men, what it is to be human. And I believe in him, and I love him. And in a world that is tempted to sectorial violence, to divide the world up into the vanishingly small group of the just and the very large number of the wrong and faulty, I side with everyone. I side with the humans, and I'm not interested in belonging to clubs.
Great, Jonah. Thank you. Magnificent humanity. Peter?
I've been very moved by seeing one or two articles by kind of well-known atheist journalists that people, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I agree with the Pope. The Pope is the heroic leader the world doesn't have at the moment. And we know the backdrop against which such comments are made. But it is important that the church engages with the world. This encyclical is a fantastic exercise in public theology. And it's got a lot to say for those who, in a sense, willing to engage with a bit of depth thinking about what's going on in the world today. And it's because it's actually has steered away from sex, because it is engaged with something which, you can't even look something up on Google now, can you, without the AI response being the first thing. So acknowledging all the people not on the internet, Rocio, we're all otherwise engaged here. And so public theology should be relevant to where things are at. So I think absolute full marks to what Leo has done by way of saying the truth which we find in Jesus Christ is applicable into every area of life, and including these areas. And there's an open mind and an open heart being expressed in that. I also think, as someone who is a watcher of Catholic matters, that it's a very powerful extension of what I think is at the heart of Vatican II, which is a church which is open to the world and is trying not to be that exclusive club, which is the temptation, I think, of every church community, to be a lovely club. Right. And I think it's a really powerful statement that in some of those current Catholic phenomena, which are having inordinate debates about, dare one say it, some inane things, liturgical postures and so forth, that is not the gospel. That is not good news for humanity. Good news for humanity is that we work together on making ourselves magnificent humanities.
Indeed. Rocio, I'm going to come to you in just a moment. I want to introduce, I'm going to give you each a chance for a one-sentence take-home. So you might begin to think of that. You might begin to think of that now. Rocio?
Well, I would say also that regarding the church is sometimes I get a little bit down also with the Catholic Church, with a lack of commitment with the world and with society. And that's why I actually felt a lot of enthusiasm with this encyclical. I felt like, oh, the Pope is giving us an example of, and not actually also the fact that he invited this guy, this techno guy, which is the founder of Anthropic, if I'm not wrong, and he was there and engaged in the dialogue. And actually that the Pope went to the presentation and talked there is really not very common in the Vatican, that the Pope himself presents the encyclical. So it shows his own commitment. And I hope that we will do the same, following that regard of being in dialogue with the world, with people. And all with the topics that are important, and we need to dialogue and to think together as a community.
Okay, a chance for a one second take home, but now I'll give you longer than that, a one sentence take home. Peter.
We need to use our God-given intelligence and do it together as people bound by common interests in our flourishing. We need to use our God-given intelligence to intelligently engage with artificial intelligence.
Jonah.
The future is not written yet. It can be what you make it through your and our engagement and the use of what we love, the affirmation of what we love.
I think that we can build that future that Jonah was saying if we put at the center the human being and the common good for all humanity. So following Jesus. And we can use all the technology if our values are clear.
Wow. Well, I said, I think before we pressed record, I said, oh, this is a bit of a risk. I'm getting together three people who I know and like and respect, and three people who haven't met each other, and throwing them in a conversation together. And this could be an absolute disaster, but it wasn't. And I found this inspiring. And actually, I feel much more stretched now by many of the comments that each of you have made. I think the word dialogue is one that I'm staying with. The importance that we, this document is coming out already, published in hard copy. But the danger, of course, is we leave it as a hard copy on a shelf studied only by people in theology schools. But it really is there to be read by anyone. It's available. It's free online. You can get a hard copy, which might cost you a little bit, but it's certainly available. And it's very readable. I love the way it's written by a perspective that I often thought with Francis, we've got a Pope from our own hemisphere, but with Leo, a Pope whose first language is English, is very helpful for people like me in terms of way of thinking as well. So thank you. Thank you, Jonah. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Rocio. And I just thought I began by opening with Pope Leo gave a little speech on the day that the encyclical was launched, and I began with the opening of it, but this is how he closes, and I think it's a good way for us to close this conversation as well. He says, "May the Lord make fruitful the great enterprise that today we entrust to his grace, letting the civilization of love mature in history." And then he says, "Upon all of you, I heartily invoke God's blessing." And then he finishes with a wonderfully human line. Thank you very much. Thank you very much to everyone who's listening. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Whoa. That was great.
I don't know.
No, it really was.